Hello and welcome to World Radio, a production of HCJB World Radio, Melbourne, Australia. Now here's your host, Eric Scatterbo.
Thank you, Derek, and welcome to World Radio. And today we talk with one of the most famous athletes in all the world, tennis great Michael Chang. Michael was born in the United States and is of Chinese descent. He'll share with us today about his tennis career, including his breakthrough performance versus Ivan Lendl in the 1989 French Open. Also, he'll tell us about his Chinese heritage and his faith in the Lord. That's tennis great Michael Chang, our guest today on World Radio. Joining us on the telephone from Southern California is tennis great Michael Chang. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And you have had a wonderful tennis career, at one point rising to number 2 in the rankings. And we kind of want to go over your tennis career. And I thought it would be interesting to start off with your breakthrough performance going all the way back to 1989. You were just 17 years old in the French Open and playing against tennis great Ivan Lendl. I was wondering if you could take us back to that match.
Wow. Well, I have to say that the French Open in 89 was certainly a very special tournament. I feel like it was a lot more things going on just besides, me playing in Paris. Certainly was a lot more than just, Michael Chang winning the French Open. I don't know if, for a lot of people, they can recall that the situation actually in Tiananmen Square was going on.
Mm.
So I found myself, my mom was traveling with me at the time, and so, if we weren't out practicing or playing a match, we would certainly be glued to the television set watching CNN and watching the things unfold there in Beijing. And, obviously the tournament was certainly not a tournament that I expected to win, and it's certainly not a tournament that I was supposed to win by any means. And, I really feel like the last, 4 matches were really kind of played on inspiration, including the match with Lendl. I was down 2 sets to love and came back, won the 3rd and 4th set. And by the end of the 4th set, actually, I started to cramp pretty severely.
Hmm.
It's kind of odd because I've gone back to look at that videotape, and even after I viewed the videotape, I still can't really comprehend how I was able to win that match. And I don't know. It's tough to explain, but I really feel like God had a much greater purpose in all of that, in bringing me through that match and in the the quarterfinal match. I had a tough match with Ronald Agenor.
Mm-hmm.
We were a set apiece, and I was completely losing the momentum. I was down a break in the 3rd set, and all of a sudden it rained.
Hmm.
Just out of nowhere, it just started raining. We went back in the locker room, got an opportunity to kind of regroup and settle in again, and came back out firing and able to get through that match. And another tough match in the semifinals, and then in the finals it was, won the first set actually pretty comfortably against Edberg, lost the next 2, and I saved like 12 or 14 break points in the 4th set.
Hmm.
Which was unheard of, and then was able to win the 5th set 6-2. But by all means, not easy matches, but I felt like through it all, I feel like, the purpose really for me to win was to put a smile upon Chinese people's faces around the world during a time when there wasn't a whole lot to smile about.
Wow.
And, for me to have an opportunity, obviously coming from, from Chinese descent,
mm-hmm.
Makes a bigger impact in that regard. And, I had an opportunity on that final Sunday to be able to address the crowd and be able to say, God bless each and every one of you, especially those in China. The strange thing was that the day that I won on June 4th in Paris was the same exact day that they had the crackdown in Tiananmen. So, I knew that there was a much greater purpose. Once everything had kind of settled in and looking back upon it, it was very much a fairy tale, but, also a difficult time and a sad time in many ways, too.
Well, I guess one thing that would come to my mind is, how could you focus when all that was going on? You're only 17 years old at that point, going up against, the greats of tennis. that in itself is kind of mind-boggling. I mean, how do you keep your composure, you know, when Ivan Lendl is across the court from you?
I think part of that actually may actually come from experience, because you know, being very young and also not being of a very big stature.
Yeah, that's another factor. I didn't even mention that. You're only 5'9" against these tennis players who are, you know, usually about 6 foot plus.
Yeah, actually, the average height now for guys in the top 100 is about 6'2".
Oh, wow.
We've got some guys that are bordering your basketball height. But, you know, certainly, you know, definitely one of the smaller players out there. You know, but, you know, I think it's just one of those things. You know, you're given a certain body type and you're given certain talents, and it's not really our job to be able to say, well, you know, who gets what, but you just go out and you make the most out of whatever talent that you've been given. And, you know, for me and in my experience, it's for me to play guys that are older or stronger or, you know, or taller or bigger is not something new.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that pretty much all my life and certainly throughout the juniors. So it would almost be more awkward for me to play somebody my own height than to play against somebody who was, you know, 6'2 or 6'3. You know, it would be bombing serves and stuff like that. I don't know if that sounds odd or not, but, you know, when you get out on tour, you just don't have a whole lot of guys that are very small anymore. So, and certainly not a whole lot back then.
So what is your edge? Is it strategy? Is it like a chess game?
I think tennis will always be a chess game. You know, you can be very strong, you can hit the ball very hard, but tennis is still very very much a thinking man's game. There's always ways to get around the power, and certainly, you know, with every strength that somebody has, there's always a weakness. And I think that one of my strengths, certainly the ability to be able to move the ball around and to be able to move around the court, anticipate, use my quickness in many ways, but I think also, you know, having the ability to be able to go out and really fight hard and not be afraid to go into the, you know, a very long match or know that a match is going to, you know, take a lot of time and a lot of effort in order to be able to pull out a win. You know, I think that you have, obviously, in life and not just on the tennis court but off the tennis court, where you're going to have struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the French Open, and particularly my match with Lendl, actually was an incredible lesson for me.
Tell us
a lot
about
of people
that.
Don't. Yeah, a lot of people actually don't know this. In fact, I didn't really share it with the press people. But actually, I share it quite a bit now with a lot of people that I speak to. You know, I was cramping at the end of the fourth set, and then actually at 2-1 in the fifth set, the cramps just started to get pretty severe to the point where I was thinking, you know, I'm not going to be able to win this match, and certainly not might not even be able to finish this match. And so I started thinking to myself, you know, it might not be a bad thing if I just called it a day and just kind of threw in the towel and said, you know, I'm sorry, but I can't finish.
Hmm.
And certainly being 17 years old, nobody would really question me.
Mm-hmm.
They'd probably just pat me on the back and say, you know, good effort for taking the world's number 1-5 sets. And so, you know, at 2-1 in the fifth set, I started to actually walk to the chair umpire to tell him that, you know, I'm sorry, I can't play anymore. And then I got to that service line, and something stirred inside me. You know, I really kind of feel like it was the Lord basically kind of telling me, you know, Michael, don't do it. And in my mind and in my heart, I was kind of like, well, what's the difference? I'm not going to be able to win anyways. And all of a sudden, it really dawned on me, it really hit me that for me, my job out there was not worrying about the winning and losing, but my job was to go out and to finish the race.
Mm.
And for me, at that time, at that point in time, in that situation, that was my race to finish. And it also dawned on me that, you know, if I quit this one time, how much easier is it going to be for me to quit the second, third, fourth, fifth time?
Mm.
And that makes a huge difference, especially in a sport like tennis, where you're not going to win all the matches very easily. You've got to fight. You've got to learn to fight.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to win every single match, certainly, but there are matches that you're going to be able to pull out. And so for me, you know, certainly if I had given up at that point in time, I would not be the person that I am today, and certainly would not be the player that I was on tour. But to be able to have that experience, to be able to say, okay, I'll just continue to fight and just take it point by point. And all of a sudden, the points be turned into games, games turn into sets. You know, all of a sudden, before I know it, a few days later, I've won the French Open.
Hmm.
And so that would be a great reminder for me, both on and off the court, during difficulties, during struggles, to be reminded of that and to be reminded the importance of not quitting,
mm-hmm.
The importance of being able to stand your ground and to be able to say, okay, well, if I fall down, I got to pick myself back up and try again.
I'm just curious to know, how did you win if you were in such physical pain against one of the greatest players ever?
I think for me, certainly going out there and you know, hitting a lot of loop balls. Basically, if I had an opportunity to go for a winner, I would just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
If it went in, great. If it went out, that was okay too, because then it meant I didn't have to run anymore for the rest of the point. But just really trying to pick my shots.
Uh-huh.
And then I think Lendl, obviously he knew that I was hurting, and I think his strategy was basically from then on out was just to try to keep me out there for as long as he could,
mm-hmm.
thinking that I would just tumble over and you know, not be able to play anymore. You know, the funny things were that the times that I really started to struggle and I had difficulties, I remember one particular point I was, Lendl had an ad point, and I went over to hit a very difficult backhand. I slid out to hit it, and I started to cramp. The cramp just, you know, stuck in my calf, and I started to limp back to the middle of the court.
Hmm.
And Lendl saw me limping and then subsequently missed the next forehand wide. So I started thinking, oh, man, I need a little bit of a break here, right? So he goes up and he hits the next serve down the middle. The linesman calls it out, and then before you know it, he's looking at the line and he starts questioning the line call, and so they bring in the other umpire, and before I know it, I got an extra like 2 minutes of break, which I really needed after
mm-hmm.
that point because the cramp was just stuck in my calf. So, you know, I just look at all of these little situations and scenarios, and I it's mind-boggling to think that you know, how all these things kind of work together. You know, God has his purpose for doing things. He really just does it in an incredible way. And, you know, for me, it's a great testament and a great reminder for me, the importance of being able to persevere,
mm-hmm.
Being able to pick myself back up in life, because there will be situations in life where you will get knocked down.
Okay, and then, of course, your life completely changed after that, I imagine. The youngest ever winner of a Grand Slam champion, and the youngest French Open winner, and no American had won that for several years before that. So
yeah.
How did your life change?
Well, it was different all of a sudden. You know, you're 17 years old, and before, you know, everyone's mentality is like, oh, don't lose to a 17-year-old kid. but after the French Open, everyone, you know, his mentality changed to, you know, from that to all of a sudden, like, wow, it's an opportunity to beat a Grand Slam champion.
Hmm.
So the pressure really changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it went from always being on my opponent to all of a sudden, you know, the pressure being on me because I was the one that was expected to win.
Mm-hmm.
It was not an easy transition to make. Certainly, I started to think that, well, I should be winning every other tournament. And strangely enough, the French Open was only my second tournament victory that I've ever had in my career.
Hmm.
So, you know, for me, I had to make some adjustments. Certainly, you know, some adjustments in time management, knowing where my priorities were. You know, I got a lot more requests for interviews and press conferences and stuff like that. And, you know, being one of the best players in the world in any sport, you need to be able to have a balance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens off the court will also translate to what happens on the court. And, you know, you can't just be the best tennis player in the world and expect to be number one. You have to be able to handle, you know, the outside pressures that come with that,
mm-hmm.
Pressures that are from the public, pressures that are from the press, maybe from sponsors, you know, different little things, and maybe even the most pressure you could possibly sometimes get is how much pressure you put upon yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a whole new ball game from there, and it took me a while to be able to find where I was comfortable, what I knew worked for me, and to be able to stick with that.
And what role did your faith play in helping you get through the pressure?
I think for me, you know, certainly my relationship with the Lord was very, very helpful in keeping things very grounded and keeping me grounded. You know, I think in the eyes of the world, if you look at what people define as success, it would generally be things that are monetarily involved,
mm-hmm.
You know, a very you know, somebody who's wealthy, somebody maybe who's famous, somebody who is, you know, gets a lot of notoriety. You know, so in the eyes of the world, you know, I could very well easily say that I was a success. But I learned very early on, because I became a Christian my rookie year, the year before, mm-hmm. when I was 16 years old. So that in itself helped me to realize why I had this talent, what I was to use it for, mm-hmm. and what my purpose was really as far as being a professional tennis player. And so when all of those things happened, I realized that those were certainly blessings from the Lord, but those were actually also tools to be able to be used to go out and glorify the Lord, to be able to help people to know of His love, and to be able to help people to know of His grace and His mercy, and for other people to be able to experience, you know, that kind of peace in their life. You know, I've always said that people will forget great wins. They'll forget forehands and backhands and great serves and great points. But if you touch a person's life, particularly for Christ, it will stay with that person not only through the rest of this life, but on into eternity. And that is so much more. That is so much greater than any tournament victory, than any French Open, than any Grand Slam, and than any ranking you could ever possibly get. Mm-hmm. You know, tennis for me has been the platform, you know, that the Lord has given me to be able to make an impact and touch lives and touch hearts. You know, looking back, that's what's been exciting. It's been a joy to be able to do that then, and it's a joy to be able to do that now.
And you went on, of course, to be one of the most successful tennis players in the 90s and rising to the rank of number two in the world. I don't know who was number one.
Sampras, Pete Sampras.
Oh, okay. But you beat him several times, didn't you?
Yeah. Actually, I grew up playing with Pete. The first time we played together, when we were 8 years old, because we both grew up in California. Yeah, so we go back a long ways.
Okay, but now that you had that platform of success, you were able to do some charity work. Could you tell us about some of the things that you got involved in?
Well, you do a lot of different kinds of charity works. You know, certainly, you know, you feel like you've been really blessed in many ways through the sport of tennis, and you have opportunities to give back in various ways. You know, one example is actually in Hong Kong, we had started an inner city kind of tennis program, mm-hmm. Which actually ended up to be, first few years where it was funded, and then after that actually got picked up by one of my sponsors, Procter & Gamble, because mm-hmm. I had endorsed a shampoo over there called Rejoice. And, you know, I think being involved in different kinds of charities and certainly different kinds of things that are really, you know, close to your heart, you know, is rewarding. You know, like I said, you have an opportunity to make a difference in people's mm-hmm. lives. And I think especially when it comes to young people and to children, because you realize that they're the ones that are really the next generation. You know, they're the ones that are going to be able to really, you know, change the world in many, many ways. And sometimes they just need to know it. You know, you have an opportunity to be able to help them to realize that each one of them is special. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that they look, the way that they are, their personality, you know, no two people are alike in that regard. And for them to be able to recognize that, for them to be able to recognize that God given, you know, each one of us a talent. Sometimes He's given us multiple talents, and we're to use that for, you know, for a greater benefit than just for ourselves.
You're listening to World Radio. If you have comments or questions, our email address is info@hcjb.org.au.
We're speaking with tennis great Michael Chang. He is, of course, of Chinese descent, and earlier you talked about winning the French Open right at the same time as Tiananmen Square was going on. So wondering if you could share with us about being of Chinese descent and the role that you played when you go back to Asia.
I have to say that whenever I go back to Asia, certainly to, you know, back to Hong Kong, back to China, I feel like I am very much at home. Mm-hmm. Even though I was born here in the United States, I'm very much, you know, I'm very much Chinese, and you know, generally Chinese before anything else. And mm-hmm. Just as far as how I live, you know, things that I eat. I mean, I'll go over there to China, and like some of the people that I play with out there on tour will be like, "Oh, Michael, you know, where are you going to eat? What are you eating?" and stuff like that. And I'll be eating all these like different things and weird things, and they won't even know what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's not an adjustment that I need to make. And the one thing that I always walk away with whenever I come back from Asia is really the warmth of the people, especially the people in China. And that is something that has really touched my heart over the years. And one of the reasons I think I've done so well, so well over there in China and in Asia, because I get a tremendous amount of support. I get a tremendous amount of encouragement from the people there to go out and to play great tennis. And, you know, for me, it's just, I feel very much at home there. You know, I'm actually looking forward to, you know, the Olympics being in Beijing. You know, a period of time, maybe about 6-7 years ago, actually, I was a goodwill ambassador for China to get the bid, to host the Olympic Games in 2008. And part of that reason was because I got a chance to see China, you know, through so many years, and I got a chance to see how China has really changed. I think I'm one of the few athletes that has been to China every single year since 1988. To be able to have that kind of experience to see how the place has changed is, I think, in many ways a very powerful testament. So, you know, for China now to be able to have those games, it's going to be a great opportunity for the world to have a better understanding of China. Certainly, you know, much better feel for what China is all about. You know, they get a chance to firsthand see and experience the warmth of the people. But maybe even more importantly, it'll be an opportunity for China to be able to show the world what they can do. You know, from there, they're going to be center stage, and I know that they've made a lot of effort to make these Olympic Games really, really special. I got a chance to go back in 2004 to Beijing, spent a couple of weeks there just speaking and sharing in many different areas. I got a chance to speak at Beijing University and Tsinghua University, and I went to Beijing. I couldn't even recognize the city because they had done so many changes to prepare for the Olympic Games. So that in itself was exciting. So each time I have an opportunity to go back, I really look forward to it and just cherish the opportunities and the time that I have there.
Now, exciting things are happening in China, as you mentioned. Also, we're hearing about the tremendous growth of Christianity in China happening over the past 20 to 30 years. Are you in contact with some of your fellow Christians in China?
Yes, I've actually done some things over there. You know, certainly my speaking engagements that that took place in April 2004. You know, obviously I had an opportunity to be able to talk about tennis and to talk about my family, but you know, certainly also a wonderful opportunity to be able to talk about my faith and to be able to share what Christ has done in and through my life. And it's been wonderful, to be able to have that opportunity. And like you said, you know, Christianity is certainly growing in China, you know, it's wonderful to see. And I know that people are continuing to try to get, you know, really good, solid teaching there, solid theology and doctrine. And, you know, it's just encouragement to be able to see, you know, Christianity really grow and make a difference in the lives of the people there. You know, for them to go out and have the mentality of being able to you know, not only love the Lord your God, but to be able to love all people and be able to express that love and that kindness in a way that is Christ-centered is truly wonderful.
So, looking to the future, what is your hope and prayer for China?
Well, my hope and prayer, actually, you know, certainly I want to see people continue to know the Lord, but I want to see people also continue to really grow and mature in their walk. You know, I think that that's also very, very important. For me personally, I would love to be able to get back to China very soon. I was hoping to be able to maybe do something with tennis in regards to the Olympic Games. We're trying to see how that can work out, but I'd love to be able to be a part of that and you know, certainly to have opportunities to impact young people over there. China's a wonderful place, and you know, it's a place that I think many people say probably the last place that really needs to be hit hard with the gospel. And it's wonderful to be able to hear about the great things that are going on and to be a part of that, and is exciting. We'll see what the Lord has planned in all of it.
And finally, what else is happening in your life now that you've retired for a few years from tennis?
I'm also going part-time school at Talbot School of Theology, and I'm also actually doing quite a few different things with our Family Foundation. We do a lot of different ministries. Right now we're actually concentrating on a sports ministry that we're trying to get started down here in Southern California. We've actually had it up and going for the past 4.5 years up in Seattle, which has done very, very well, and now we're looking to expand that down here. So, you know, a lot of fun things going on, and you know, I thought that maybe after I retired I would do less travel and maybe wouldn't be as busy, but in some ways it's been a little bit busier, which has been great. You know, I've enjoyed it and met some wonderful people along the way, and it's great to be able to you know, make partnerships and meet people that are like-minded and have the same passion. So a lot of things to look forward to in 2006.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed that conversation with tennis great Michael Chang. And if you have any questions about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ or about the Christian faith in general, please write to us here at HCJB Australia. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. That's info@hcjb.org.au. Also, we will give you our mailing address in just a few moments at the end of the program. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to today's edition of World Radio, and we invite you to join us again next time. Until then, I'm Eric Scatabo saying so long, and God bless.
You have been listening to World Radio. We're always interested in your comments and questions. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. Our mailing address is World Radio, HCJB Australia, GPO Box 691, Melbourne 3001, Australia. To listen online, go to hcjb.org/Australia. Thanks for listening. Please join us next time for another edition of World Radio. Hello and welcome to World Radio, a production of HCJB World Radio, Melbourne, Australia. Now here's your host, Eric Scatabo.
Thank you, Derek, and welcome to World Radio. And today we talk with one of the most famous athletes in all the world, tennis great Michael Chang. Michael was born in the United States and is of Chinese descent. He'll share with us today about his tennis career, including his breakthrough performance versus Ivan Lendl in the 1989 French Open. Also, he'll tell us about his Chinese heritage and his faith in the Lord. That's tennis great Michael Chang, our guest today on World Radio.
Joining us on the telephone from Southern California is tennis great Michael Chang. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And you have had a wonderful tennis career, at one point rising to number 2 in the rankings. And we kind of want to go over your tennis career. And I thought it would be interesting to start off with your breakthrough performance going all the way back to 1989. You were just 17 years old in the French Open and playing against tennis great Ivan Lendl. I was wondering if you could take us back to that match.
Wow. Well, I have to say that the French Open in 89 was certainly a very special tournament. I feel like it was a lot more things going on just besides me playing in Paris. Certainly was a lot more than just Michael Chang winning the French Open. I don't know if for a lot of people they can recall that the situation actually in Tiananmen Square was going on. So I found myself, my mom was traveling with me at the time, and so, if we weren't out practicing or playing a match, we would certainly be glued to the television set watching CNN and watching the things unfold there in Beijing. And, obviously the tournament was certainly not a tournament that I expected to win, and it's certainly not a tournament that I was supposed to win by any means. And, I really feel like the last, four matches were really kind of played on inspiration, including the match with Lendl. I was down 2 sets to love and came back, won the third and fourth set. And by the end of the fourth set, actually, I started to cramp pretty severely. It's kind of odd because I've gone back to look at that videotape, and even after I viewed the videotape, I still can't really comprehend how I was able to win that match. And, I don't know. It's tough to explain, but I really feel like God had a much greater purpose in all of that, and bringing me through that match, and in the the quarterfinal match, I had a tough match with Ronald Agenor. Mm-hmm. We were a set apiece, and I was completely losing the momentum. I was down a break in the third set, and all of a sudden it rained. Just out of nowhere, it just started raining. We went back in the locker room, got an opportunity to kind of regroup and settle in again, and came back out firing and able to get through that match. Had another tough match in the semifinals, and then in the finals it was, won the first set actually pretty comfortably against Edberg. Lost the next two, and I saved like 12 or 14 break points in the fourth set, which was unheard of, and then was able to win the fifth set 6-2. But by all means, not easy matches. But I felt like through it all, I feel like, the purpose really for me to win was to put a smile upon Chinese people's faces around the world during a time when there wasn't a whole lot to smile about.
Wow.
And, for me to have an opportunity, obviously coming from, from Chinese descent, makes a bigger impact in that regard. And, I had an opportunity on that final Sunday to be able to address the crowd and be able to say, God bless each and every one of you, especially those in China. The strange thing was that the day that I won on June 4th in Paris was the same exact day that they had the crackdown in Tiananmen. So, I knew that there was a much greater purpose. Once everything had kind of settled in and looking back upon it, it was very much a fairy tale, but also a difficult time and a sad time in many ways, too.
Well, I guess one thing that would come to my mind is, how could you focus when all that was going on? You're only 17 years old at that point, going up against, the greats of tennis. That in itself is kind of mind-boggling. I mean, how do you keep your composure, when Ivan Lendl is across the court from you?
I think part of that actually may actually come from experience, because, being very young and also not being of a very big stature.
Yeah, that's another factor. I didn't even mention that. You're only 5'9" against these tennis players who are, usually about 6 foot plus.
Yeah, actually the average height now for guys in the top 100 is about 6'2".
Oh, wow.
We've got some guys that are bordering your basketball height. But, certainly, definitely one of the smaller players out there. I think it's just one of those things. You're given a certain body type, and you're given certain talents, and it's not really our job to be able to say, well, who gets what, but you just go out and you make the most out of whatever talent that you've been given. And, you know, for me and in my experience, it's for me to play guys that are older or stronger or, you know, or taller or bigger is not something new.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that pretty much all my life and certainly throughout the juniors. So it would almost be more awkward for me to play somebody my own height than to play against somebody who was, you know, 6'2 or 6'3. You know, it would be bombing serves and stuff like that. I don't know if that sounds odd or not, but, you know, when you get out on tour, you just don't have a whole lot of guys that are very small anymore. So, and certainly not a whole lot back then.
So what is your edge? Is it strategy? Is it like a chess game?
I think tennis will always be a chess game. You know, you can be very strong, you can hit the ball very hard, but tennis is still very, very much a thinking man's game. There's mm-hmm. always ways to get around the power, and certainly, you know, with every strength that somebody has, there's always a weakness. And I think that one of my strengths, certainly the ability to be able to move the ball around and to be able to move around the court, anticipate, use my quickness in many ways. But I think also, you know, having the ability to be able to go out and really fight, fight hard and not be afraid to go into the, you know, a very long match or know that a match is going to, you know, take a lot of time and a lot of effort in order to be able to pull out a win. You know, I think that you have obviously in life and not just on the tennis court but off the tennis court where you're going to have struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the French Open, and particularly my match with Lindell, actually was an incredible lesson for me.
Tell us
a lot
about
of people
that.
Don't. Yeah, a lot of people actually don't know this. In fact, I didn't really share it with the press people. But actually, I share it quite a bit now with a lot of people that I speak to. You know, I was cramping in the at the end of the fourth set, and then actually at 2-1 in the fifth set, the cramps just started to get pretty severe to the point where I was thinking, you know, I'm not going to be able to win this match, and certainly not might not even be able to finish this match. And so I started thinking to myself, you know, it might not be a bad thing if I just called it a day and just kind of threw in the towel and said, you know, I'm sorry, but I can't finish.
Hmm.
And certainly being 17 years old, nobody would really question me.
Mm-hmm.
They'd probably just pat me on the back and say, you know, good effort for taking the world's number 1-5 sets. And so, you know, at 2-1 in the fifth set, I started to actually walk to the chair umpire to tell him that, you know, I'm sorry, I can't play anymore. And then I got to that service line, and something stirred inside me. You know, I really kind of feel like it was the Lord basically kind of telling me, you know, Michael, don't do it. And in my mind and in my heart, I was kind of like, well, what's the difference? I'm not going to be able to win anyways. And all of a sudden, it really dawned on me, it really hit me that for me, my job out there was not worrying about the winning and losing, but my job was to go out and to finish the race. And for me, at that time, at that point in time, in that situation, that was my race to finish. And it also dawned on me that, you know, if I quit this one time, how much easier is it going to be for me to quit the second, third, fourth, fifth time? And that makes a huge difference, especially in a sport like tennis, where you're not going to win all the matches very easily. You've got to fight. You've got to learn to fight.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to win every single match, certainly, but there are matches that you're going to be able to pull out. And so for me, you know, certainly if I had given up at that point in time, I would not be the person that I am today, and certainly would not be the player that I was on tour. But to be able to have that experience, to be able to say, okay, I'll just continue to fight and just take it point by point, and all of a sudden those points be turned into games, games turn into sets. You know, all of a sudden before I know it, a few days later, I've won the French Open. And so that would be a great reminder for me, both on and off the court, during difficulties, during struggles, to be reminded of that and to be reminded the importance of not quitting, the importance of being able to stand your ground and to be able to say, okay, well, if I fall down, I got to pick myself back up and try again.
I'm just curious to know, how did you win if you were in such physical pain against one of the greatest players ever?
I think for me, certainly going out there and you know, hitting a lot of loop balls, basically, if I had an opportunity to go for a winner, I would just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
If it went in, great. If it went out, that was okay too, because then it meant I didn't have to run anymore for the rest of the point. But just really trying to pick my shots.
Uh-huh.
And then I think Lindell, obviously, he knew that I was hurting, and I think his strategy was basically from then on out was just to try to keep me out there for as long as he could, thinking that I would just tumble over and not be able to play anymore. The funny things were that the times that I really started to struggle and I had difficulties, I remember one particular point I was, Lendl had an ad point, and I went over to hit a very difficult backhand. I slid out to hit it, and I started to cramp. The cramp just, stuck in my calf, and I started to limp back to the middle of the court. And Lendl saw me limping and then subsequently missed the next forehand wide. So I started thinking, oh, man, I need a little bit of a break here, right? So he goes up and he hits the next serve down the middle. The linesman calls it out, and then before you know it, he's looking at the line, and he starts questioning the line call, and so they bring in the other umpire, and before I know it, I got an extra, 2 minutes of break, which I really needed after that point because the cramp was just stuck in my calf. So, I just look at all of these little situations and scenarios, and I it's mind-boggling to think that, how all these things kind of work together. God has his purpose for doing things. He really just does it in an incredible way. For me, it's a great testament and a great reminder for me the importance of being able to persevere, being able to pick myself back up in life, because there will be situations in life where you will get knocked down.
Okay, and then, of course, your life completely changed after that, I imagine. The youngest ever winner of a Grand Slam champion, and the youngest French Open winner, and no American had won that for several years before that. So how did your life change?
Well, it was different all of a sudden. You're 17 years old, and before, everyone's mentality is like, oh, don't lose to a 17-year-old kid. but after the French Open, everyone, his mentality changed to, from that to all of a sudden, wow, it's an opportunity to beat a Grand Slam champion. So the pressure really changed. It went from always being on my opponent to all of a sudden, the pressure being on me because I was the one that was expected to win. It was not an easy transition to make. Certainly, I started to think that, I should be winning every other tournament. And strangely enough, the French Open was only my second tournament victory that I've ever had in my career. For me, I had to make some adjustments. Certainly, some adjustments in time management, knowing where my priorities were. I got a lot more requests for interviews and press conferences and stuff like that. And, being one of the best players in the world in any sport, you need to be able to have a balance in your life. What happens off the court will also translate to what happens on the court. And, you can't just be the best tennis player in the world and expect to be number one. You have to be able to handle, the outside pressures that come with that, pressures that are from the public, pressures that are from the press, maybe from sponsors, different little things, and maybe even the most pressure you could possibly sometimes get is how much pressure you put upon yourself. So it was really a whole new ball game from there, and it took me a while to be able to find where I was comfortable, what I knew worked for me, and to be able to stick with that.
And what role did your faith play in helping you get through the pressure?
I think for me, certainly my relationship with the Lord was very, very helpful in keeping things very grounded and keeping me grounded. I think in the eyes of the world, if you look at what people define as success, it would generally be things that are monetarily involved, a very, somebody who's wealthy, somebody maybe who's famous, somebody who is, gets a lot of notoriety. So in the eyes of the world, I could very well easily say that I was a success, but I learned very early on, because I became a Christian my rookie year, the year before, when I was 16 years old. So that in itself helped me to realize why I had this talent, what I was to use it for, and what my purpose was really as far as being a professional tennis player. And so when all of those things happened, I realized that those were certainly blessings from the Lord, but those were actually also tools to be able to be used to go out and glorify the Lord, to be able to help people to know of His love, and to be able to help people to know of His grace and His mercy, and for other people to be able to experience, that kind of peace in their life. You know, I've always said that people will forget great wins. They'll forget forehands and backhands and great serves and great points. But if you touch a person's life, particularly for Christ, it will stay with that person not only through the rest of this life, but on into eternity. And that is so much more. That is so much greater than any tournament victory, than any French Open, than any Grand Slam, and than any ranking you could ever possibly get. You know, tennis for me has been the platform, you know, that the Lord has given me to be able to make an impact and touch lives and touch hearts. You know, looking back, that's what's been exciting. It's been a joy to be able to do that then, and it's a joy to be able to do that now.
And you went on, of course, to be one of the most successful tennis players in the 90s and rising to the rank of number two in the world. I don't know who was number one.
Sampras, Pete Sampras.
Oh, okay. But you beat him several times, didn't you?
Yeah. Actually, I grew up playing with Pete. The first time we played together when we were 8 years old, because we both grew up in California. Yeah, so we go back a long ways.
Okay, but now that you had that platform of success, you were able to do some charity work. Could you tell us about some of the things that you got involved in?
Well, you do a lot of different kinds of charity works. You know, certainly, you know, you feel like you've been really blessed in many ways through the sport of tennis, and you have opportunities to give back in various ways. You know, one example is actually in Hong Kong, we had started an inner city kind of tennis program, which actually ended up to be first few years where it was funded, and then after that actually got picked up by one of my sponsors, Procter & Gamble, because I had endorsed a shampoo over there called Rejoice. And, you know, I think being involved in different kinds of charities and certainly different kinds of things that are really, you know, close to your heart, you know, is rewarding. You know, like I said, you have an opportunity to make a difference in people's lives. And I think especially when it comes to young people and to children, because you realize that they're the ones that are really the next generation. You know, they're the ones that are going to be able to really, you know, change the world in many, many ways. And sometimes they just need to know it. You know, you have an opportunity to be able to help them to realize that each one of them is special. You know, the way that they look, the way that they are, their personality, you know, no two people are alike in that regard. And for them to be able to recognize that, for them to be able to recognize that God has given, you know, each one of us a talent. Sometimes he's given us multiple talents. And we're to use that for, you know, for a greater benefit than just for ourselves.
You're listening to World Radio. If you have comments or questions, our email address is info, that's I-N-F-O, at hcjb.org.au.
We're speaking with tennis great Michael Chang. He is, of course, of Chinese descent, and earlier you talked about winning the French Open right at the same time as Tiananmen Square was going on. So wondering if you could share with us about being of Chinese descent and the role that you played when you go back to Asia.
I have to say that whenever I go back to Asia, certainly to you know, back to Hong Kong, back to China, I feel like I am very much at home. Even though I was born here in the United States, I'm very much, you know, I'm very much Chinese, and you know, generally Chinese before anything else. And just as far as how I live, you know, things that I eat. I mean, I'll go over there to China, and like some of the people that I play with out there on tour will be like, "Oh, Michael, you know, where are you going to eat? What are you eating?" and stuff like that. And I'll be eating all these like different things and weird things, and they won't even know what it is. You know, for me, it's not an adjustment that I need to make. And the one thing that I always walk away with whenever I come back from Asia is really the warmth of the people, especially the people in China. And that is something that has really touched my heart over the years, and one of the reasons I think I've done so well, so well over there in China and in Asia, because I get a tremendous amount of support. I get a tremendous amount of encouragement from the people there to go out and to play great tennis. And you know, for me, it's just I feel very much at home there. You know, there I'm actually looking forward to, you know, the Olympics being in Beijing. You know, a period of time, maybe about 6-7 years ago, actually, I was a goodwill ambassador for China to get the bid to host the Olympic Games in 2008. And part of that reason was because I got a chance to see China through so many years, and I got a chance to see how China has really changed. I think I'm one of the few athletes that has been to China every single year since 1988.
Hmm.
To be able to have that kind of experience to see how the place has changed is, I think, in many ways a very powerful testament. So, for China now to be able to have those games, it's going to be a great opportunity for the world to have a better understanding of China. Certainly, much better feel for what China is all about. They get a chance to firsthand see and experience the warmth of the people. But maybe even more importantly, it'll be an opportunity for China to be able to show the world what they can do.
Hmm.
From there, they're going to be center stage, and I know that they've made a lot of effort to make these Olympic Games really, really special. I got a chance to go back in 2004 to Beijing, spent a couple of weeks there just speaking and sharing in many different areas. I got a chance to speak at Beijing University and Tsinghua University, and I went to Beijing. I couldn't even recognize the city because they had done so many changes to prepare for the Olympic Games. So that in itself was exciting. So each time I have an opportunity to go back, I really look forward to it and just cherish the opportunities and the time that I have there.
Now, exciting things are happening in China, as you mentioned. Also, we're hearing about the tremendous growth of Christianity in China happening over the past 20 to 30 years. Are you in contact with some of your fellow Christians in China?
Yes, I've actually done some things over there. Certainly my speaking engagements that took place in April 2004. Obviously I had an opportunity to be able to talk about tennis and to talk about my family, but certainly also a wonderful opportunity to be able to talk about my faith and to be able to share what Christ has done in and through my life. And it's been wonderful. Wonderful to be able to have that opportunity. And like you said, Christianity is certainly growing in China, and it's wonderful to see. And I know that people are continuing to try to get really good solid teaching there, solid theology and doctrine, and it's just encouragement to be able to see Christianity really grow and make a difference in the lives of the people there. For them to go out and have the mentality of being able to not only love the Lord your God, but to be able to love all people and be able to express that love and that kindness in a way that is Christ-centered is truly wonderful.
So, looking to the future, what is your hope and prayer for China?
Well, my hope and prayer, actually, certainly I want to see people continue to know the Lord, but I want to see people also continue to really grow and mature in their walk. I think that's also very, very important. For me personally, I would love to be able to get back to China very soon. I was hoping to be able to maybe do something with tennis in regards to the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to see how that can work out, but I'd love to be able to be a part of that and certainly to have opportunities to impact young people over there.
Mm-hmm.
China's a wonderful place, it's a place that I think many people say probably the last place that really needs to be hit hard with the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to be able to hear about the great things that are going on and to be a part of that is exciting. We'll see what the Lord has planned in all of it.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what else is happening in your life now that you've retired for a few years from tennis?
I'm also going part-time school. At Talbot School of Theology, and I'm also actually doing quite a few different things with our family foundation. We do a lot of different ministries. Right now we're actually concentrating on a sports ministry that we're trying to get started down here in Southern California. We've actually had it up and going for the past 4.5 years up in Seattle, which has done very, very well, and now we're looking to expand that down here. So, a lot of fun things going on, and I thought that maybe after I retired I would do less travel and maybe wouldn't be as busy, but in some ways it's been a little bit busier, which has been great. I've enjoyed it and met some wonderful people along the way, and it's great to be able to make partnerships and meet people that are like-minded and have the same passion. So a lot of things to look forward to in 2006.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed that conversation with tennis great Michael Chang. And if you have any questions about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, or about the Christian faith in general, please write to us here at HCJB Australia. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. That's info@hcjb.org.au. Also, we will give you our mailing address in just a few moments at the end of the program. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to today's edition of World Radio, and we invite you to join us again next time. Until then, I'm Eric Scadabo saying so long and God bless.
You have been listening to World Radio. We're always interested in your comments and questions. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. Our mailing address is World Radio, HCJB Australia, GPO Box 691, Melbourne 3001, Australia. To listen online, go to hcjb.org/Australia. Thanks for listening. Please join us next time for another edition of World Radio.